Yeah, recording.
This is...
You fucked it up again, Will.
No! Shut up! This is Mom's Basement Podcast, episode 38, We Fucked Up Again edition.
Yeah.
Alex? Alex, now you drop your cue.
Yeah, drop some
Noah. Where we answer the question, can we actually finish this fucking podcast?
No, we can't.
Yes, we can.
Yes.
So there you go. Will, take a good, grab hold of the captain's helm.
Okay. Well, the least professional podcast on the internet is back and less professional than ever. But what we've done is we've changed our audio recording software, so our sound quality should go from atrocious to mediocre.
And I got a new microphone also.
Right. So some of the static should be gone from the recording with any luck. In order to make up for that, in order to make up for the fact that we have slightly improved our audio quality, we've decided that we have to let something else go. So
yeah, for every positive, there's a negative. For everything you gain, there's something you lost, such as the Alchemist Code.
Right, or else we might be only the second least professional podcast on internets, and we can't have that. So tonight, we're recording without a fucking net. We have no topic at all. We spent about an hour and a half sitting around saying, well, maybe we should talk about this tonight. And then we said, no, that would be too professional. That topic is too interesting. No, Alex, I'm sorry. That idea would lead to captivating, positive, productive, useful conversation. Fuck that noise. We're going to record without having anything at all to say.
Yeah. So here we go.
All right. Yeah, Rudy, you're number one. Throw something out there. What do you have to say?
All right, well, I really want to see the Avengers. It looks awesome. It's got superheroes in it. And it's badass.
Wow, are we going to become another... I was going to say, are we going to become another comic book movie discussion podcast?
Oh, we totally should.
Actually, we'd probably get a couple of listeners that way. Sorry, Alex. No.
I'm saying there's so many people who are on the comic book bandwagon. It's fucking ridiculous. All of a sudden now that a certain portion of things that people don't give two shits about is slightly important now. Everyone has to go do it.
You know, I have to admit this. I've never been a fan of comic books. Wait, that's not true. I spent one, 3-month period when I was 12 or 13 reading comic books. I think I had, two copies of The Punisher or something, and I thought they were badass. And then I don't know what happened, but I got out of that phase really fucking fast.
Yeah. I've never been one for comic books themselves, but I love the comic book movies and superheroes, because I think they're neat.
I think that 9 out of 10 comic book movies or superhero movies suck. But the other 1 out of 10 could potentially be awesome. So, Rudy, Avengers, is it 1 of the 9 out of 10 or 1 of the 1 out of 10?
See, I don't know. They took Ed Norton out as a Hulk for some reason.
I know.
And that kind of sucks, but Robert Downey Jr. is in it, so it should be fairly epic, just based on that alone.
What do you think, Alex?
I didn't like any of the new movies that came out to begin with, and so more than likely, this is going to be more of the same, more of the same suckage.
Oh.
And that's kind of strange, considering that for some reason this is the time of the the decade where people actually gave two shits about comic books general. And I think a lot of it has to do with they're just hipsters. I'm just going to say it right there, because who gives a fuck about Robert Downey Jr., a.k.a. Tony Stark. Who cares about that guy? He's an international playboy who does whatever the fuck he wants.
Mm-hmm.
And all because he has a somewhat traumatic experience, he's now some super important dude. So wait, I really don't care about it. That's why.
Alex, are you saying that you were into comic books before they... you were into superheroes before they were cool? But now there's... Yeah,
I'm not saying that at all. No. I've always hated superheroes.
Oh, you have? Always.
Yeah, I've been hating them before it was cool to hate them, if that's what you're trying to get at.
So you're kind of like a superhero hate hipster, then.
Yeah, I'm like a super hipster, where I hate something before it's even hateable.
Yeah.
All
right, so I'm going to get to my topic here, of why I don't like this movie.
Okay.
Because this movie has been backed upon by the generations of success the other shitty movies have been done. And when I say shitty movie, I mean I want a movie that is actually believable to exist in those worlds.
You want a realistic comic book movie out there.
Yeah, a somewhat realistic movie. Because, like, you can have Batman, but the majority of the time, they make it to where everything around him, they pretty much set him up to be the only thing that's good about that world.
Mm-hmm.
And I can give you examples here because, like, I think it was when, like, The Dark Knight or Batman Forever or whatever. No, that was the shitty one with George Clooney.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, the Batman Begins movie, there we go. That's the one with the Christopher Nolan, edgy and dark.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah,
kind of dark thing. Batman.
Number one, I've always hated that because, like, it's way too serious. It's taking it way too far in terms of, like, what the whole premise was supposed to be about. You're not supposed to care about, really, his backgrounds. It's just supposed to be something that's thrown at you as, this is the reason why he behaves this way. Don't pay attention to it. And then for 2 hours long, they paid attention to it. And then everything is so serious. Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, I like the Batman Begins just because of Scarecrow.
Yes.
Killian, it was the only reason to watch it.
Murphy made that movie.
Yeah.
I don't know, though. I'll be honest. We've got a few topics up in the air here. The Avengers, I really feel... I guess I'm somewhere between Rudy and Alex on this. I'm like, meh. Don't really... I think it could potentially be a passable film, but honestly, the Marvel superhero adaptations have been going downhill with each iteration since Iron Man. I thought Iron Man pretty much, as a fun popcorn movie, kicked ass. Although Iron Man is probably the first and only superhero movie that was more interesting before the main character became the superhero.
Yeah.
The first half an hour of Iron Man was fucking amazing. It was just, I don't know what made it so awesome. Maybe it was partially Robert Downey Jr.'s ridiculous character, but I think it actually sort of gets at what Alex was saying, was that it did not feel like a superhero movie, and that it did not feel like it was taking place in another world, in another reality. You know, it felt like, you know, obviously there was dramatic, you know, things were dramatized, you know, there was a dramatic exaggeration in that, in the first half an hour or something of that film, but it was not set up in such a way that you thought, oh, this guy's a superhero, there are the supervillains, you know, and they're going to fight eventually. It was like, this guy's a defense contractor, and these guys are terrorists. And it was shot with it was shot almost, not exactly with the cinema verite handheld stuff, but a few of the shots had that going on. So it looked more like the opening of a, action thriller type film, or even a war movie, you know, right, set in the current Middle East. And I thought that was really cool. You know, you establish it as, here's this interesting character who's not established with any redeeming qualities whatsoever. unlike most superhero movies, which start off where you're supposed to think, oh, the superhero is kind of a jerk, maybe, before they, the alter ego is kind of a jerk, but you can see how they're going to become a superhero. And there's always, it's always transparently obvious. This set this guy up as just an absolute irredeemable dickhead. And set him in a believable setting, and set it within the context, the real socio-political context of, what's going on in the Middle East with, with extremists and with, with insurgents and with, this kind of, it was even an improvised explosive device that they hit, if I remember correctly, when they're in the Humvee.
Yeah. Yep.
So you had this feeling like you were in a real world, and then by the last half an hour of the movie, it's every other superhero fight scene with the big metal suits, and they're throwing each other around in the city, in the sky at night, and it was like, oh, okay. I mean, it was still enjoyable by that point, because the movie had sold itself to me, but since then, though, every single one of these Marvel movies has seemed to be less impressive than the one before it, which makes me concerned about the Avengers.
Yeah, because going off that, because you were talking about how you really like the realism attached to the actual story, it makes me wonder sometimes, between the old movies of the past there, where they talk about, that was kind of redundant of me, but where they talked about it was definitely an obvious kids movie where there was no confusion for you to deal with. That way, they clearly know who the good guy was. They clearly knew who the bad guy was. And then, Rock'em Sock'em Robots for the next hour and a half. Meanwhile, the more updated ones, the darker, edgier ones, a lot of the better movies are the ones where it's quite a bit more, you would actually see this in real life. And because there's that connection of, hey, this is not complete make-believe, it definitely gets you into the movie a lot better.
Right.
Some, immersion. Right.
And I mean, yeah, not that I have anything against, a more stylized, Tim Burton-esque approach to the subject matter, but I think if you're going to do that, you have to be careful, you have to do it right, and you have to make sure that you're not just using this style haphazardly because it looks cool. Cough, Zack Snyder, cough.
Yeah, if you want to do that, you basically have to be Tim Burton.
Yeah, exactly. And you have to be Tim Burton 20 years ago, not Tim Burton today.
Yeah. But I don't know, I think, what I think about the Avengers will be based mostly on who the villain is.
Yeah.
I don't know who. The trailer didn't give any sort of indication, so.
Well, they're saying Loki is the primary villain, but everyone's speculating that there's some other, secondary villain or another villain that's introduced later in the film. Because no one really buys the fact that, a dozen superheroes are getting together just to kick Loki's ass when Thor already kicked his ass in the Thor film. I mean,
right?
It's got to be something like Apocalypse or like Darkseid. It's got to be something like tremendous. It has to be,
right?
Or else that'd be.
I got my fingers crossed for Galactus.
Galactus.
He was already in Fantastic Four, though.
Well, I didn't watch that because it looked like shit, but I'm hoping someone will do Galactus right.
Okay.
Right.
Or even, who's the other sort of Galactus X-esque guy? The other, he's not like a world-destroying giant, but he's another evil space entity who causes a whole bunch of trouble. I guess that could be any of 100 different Marvel villains, so I don't know.
Yeah.
Oh. I think it's Phantos?
Yeah, Thanos. Thanos is who I was thinking of. It's amazing that you got it from my amazingly vague or my incredibly vague hint?
Well, there's only a select few of those big, you know, space monsters that actually, you know, people care about.
Right.
All right, so going off that, because I still want to talk about this movie thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay.
Because for some reason, every other, like, you know, all these recent movies that people are going gaga for, and I haven't been really caring about it, I want to know, why in the hell do people give two shits about some of these movies?
Well, why don't
I mean, is it like lack of quality? Like, there's like, that's like, this is the only recent thing that's actually decent, so everyone's like, oh, this is amazing.
Well, why don't you go through the movies one by one, and we'll tell you that, excuse me, we'll tell you why we did or did not give two shits about them.
All right, so, let's go with New Hulk.
Which one? The Incredible Hulk, or the Hulk that was like 2 hours of Ang Lee directing whoever was playing Banner too?
I think New Hulk, like the newer Hulk. That's why I said New Hulk.
Oh, the Incredible
Hulk. The newest
Hulk.
One that they made.
So not the dramatic psychodrama.
Yes, not the Moby Hulk.
No.
Okay. I didn't see The Incredible Hulk. You mean the one with Ed Norton, right? I skipped that one.
Yes.
I was like, eh, didn't want to see it. Rudy, you saw it, though. What was cool about it?
Oh, I saw part of it.
Oh.
Bits and pieces of it. And what was cool about it was Ed Norton, basically, and that was about it. But,
okay, now I actually saw the whole thing. And
okay.
It left me wanting.
Now, how so? Like,
mainly because the main problem I always have is even though, like, they try to be more gritty with it, they still use superhero comic logic for a lot of the solutions to the problems.
Oh, yeah.
And that's what also cuts me off with a lot of the newer, edgier, dark movies, if you want to. It's just that's the phrase that they always used when they, like, ever since, like, you know, Batman Begins, you know, was made, when it was published. Ever since that came out, everyone's been saying that in order to hook people in for their comic book movies. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them still forget that superhero comics have almost no logic to them. So as soon as you get to the dark, edgy part of it, where it's kind of cool because it's like, yeah, this could really happen, you know, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. Then you get this the what the fuck ideas that count as plausible for them to use.
Yeah, you mean
like for example here. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say stuff like Superman catching someone in midair and fucking saving them.
Or, no, I'm talking like Superman lifting an entire island made of kryptonite.
Yes.
Oh, or that.
Oh, that movie was so fucking disappointing, but I guess we'll get to it in time.
Okay, so, like, let's just go off the Hulk here for example here. Because the main thing, the easiest way to kill the Hulk is to kill him when he's not in form.
Right.
Right.
Yet nobody tried to do that the entire film.
And that's
like it's one thing, yeah. Because that's like his greatest weakness, and there was no example of people preying upon that weakness.
That's true. Yeah, his alter ego is kind of his weakness, I guess.
I don't know. This is quickly becoming Mom's Basement talks about movies we never saw edition. Mom's Basement reviews films without watching them. I don't know. I did not watch that movie basically because it looked really mediocre. Although the idea of American History X, Ed Norton, as the Hulk was a pretty cool idea. I just whenever I think of the movie, I think of the dinner table conversation in American History X where his mother has her Jewish boyfriend over. Or is he her boyfriend, or is he like?
I don't know. I think it was like her boyfriend.
But and Ed Norton gets up and throws this huge fit, and it's like, "You're not welcome here." Or no, he shows him
his
swastika tattoo, and this means not welcome. I just imagine him getting up at the table and doing that, and then transforming into the Hulk, and like, I don't know, throwing the table through the window or something.
Yeah, see that?
All right, well then, I'll wrap it up here and just say, like, the main problem I have with the new movies is they're more realistic, but they half-ass it. I liked most of the older movies is because they were full-blown, like, you know, what the F. But these ones are trying to be more realistic, and then they surprise you with still using what the F.
Right.
Because, like, you know, that whole immersion thing, because, like, when you see, like, you know, the Tim Burton Batman, that is so much, you know, what the hell's going on here, that it's fun. It's actually entertaining to watch. It's not realistic to the comic book, and who cares about being realistic to the comic book? This is just a stupid adaptation. It's just a cash grab. No one really is trying to do serious art house here. And the new movies are more art house, but they still have the what the hell's going on with, you know, with these people. Are they all retarded? Like, what's, do they all have, you know, like a part of their brain stem removed where they can't, like, you know, do, like, basic cohesion of their thoughts?
Right.
Yeah.
And that's why I've been hating most of the new films, because they half-ass it. They go halfway, and they don't fully embrace, like, what style of movie they want to make.
Rudy?
Yeah, I guess to
rebut.
No, I was just gonna say, I guess to kind of talk about that more. Like, I what you mean is like how comic book logic is kind of still thrown into a lot of the plot elements and stuff like that. Like, oh, how could they not have seen that? You know, this dude is this or whatever. That kind of thing. Is that what you're talking about? Or?
Yeah, where, I mean, comic books are obviously meant for a younger audience, so therefore, you know, things like the Adam West version of Batman where they have the battle ladder,
yeah.
That makes perfect sense.
Right.
But when they try to pretend that it's meant for a, you know, for grown-ups, and they still use things like that,
right,
is when it really throws me off, because I want them to take it seriously if they're going to pretend to be serious about it.
Right. So I always thought that was just kind of something that was thrown in for the fans, I guess. Because there's basically, like, the people, the critics, who, you know, like the newer Batman because it's maybe darker and edgier. But then there's the fans who still want the same shit. You know, they still want him throwing the batarang around and shit like that. So,
right.
I guess you really have to strike a balance there.
Well, I think really what you have are almost three camps whenever you're talking about a superhero movie. You have, like you said, you have the comic book fans who are going to judge it by how well it lives up to the source material or how effectively they feel it interprets the source material. Then you have the critics, which Rudy mentioned, who are going to look at it as a work of art and judge it as a work of art and not in any way as a comic book movie.
Right.
And then you have the people who don't know shit about either of these perspectives and want to go and watch a fun action movie.
Yeah.
And who would be intimidated by too much pandering to either of the two previous groups.
That's true.
And I think it's difficult to find a really effective balance there. And of those three groups, I think I tend to fall closer to the critics on this thing. I guess Rudy is closer to the comic book fans. And I don't know if Alex is really with the... It sounds like he objects to the summer action movie crowd here, but... And I
want to have a good time, and I don't want to question, like, the logic that's being used. I want, if it makes sense, then I'm with it. If they're doing stuff like the character flies, and there's a situation, or like it can like punch through walls and shit like that.
Right.
And yet the person, like, if the person decides that they're in a situation where they're in a bunker and they have to run out of there, and the person continues to try and run out instead of punch through a wall and can escape that way.
Mm.
You know, yeah. where they set them up for dramatic moments, but their superpowers allow them to go be, you know, to simplify the answer, period. Like, I want, like I said, if they're going to use realism, I want realism. I don't want them to half-ass it and use realism when it doesn't matter.
Right. Well, what you're really talking about then is plots that straitjacket the characters and that don't conform to the logic of the reality that's been established by the film. Right? When
a character does something
that's just there to move the plot along, or just there because the director or the writer felt this would be a tenser scene, even though it defies the logic of the setting that's been established.
Yeah, because that happens with almost every single movie. Go off with that Dark Knight movie, you know, the one that people, you know, were really, hoo-ha about how awesome it was.
Yeah.
Like, the one scene where they are transporting, like, Commissioner Gordon across, like, a freeway or something like that.
Right.
Well, not Commissioner Gordon, but I'm talking about the guy who becomes Two-Face later. I think that they transport him, right?
Oh,
right.
Harvey Dent. Yeah.
Harvey Dent, yep.
Yeah.
Aaron
Spoiler alert, lol.
Yeah, spoiler alert.
But they're in the scene where they're delivering them through they're going through the underpass of the highway.
Right.
And, the big semi truck comes in and starts shooting at the side of the SWAT truck.
Mm-hmm.
And both of the guys in the front of the van are flabbergasted with MP5s and decide not to open the door and shoot back.
Yeah.
And they're just sitting there watching him do the entire thing. It's like, can you pretend to shoot at him at least? And have the guy that's on the side get shot, so that way the guy's fucked and can't do anything about it.
Yeah.
I mean, put those moments in there that make it believable. Don't just go oh, this would be a badass thing, and then all of a sudden not apply all the reality, the realism that you imposed on us in the beginning.
See, moments like that don't really bother me at all. I guess I expect to be suspending disbelief, especially when it comes to the plot. Unless something is... What I don't like is when main characters in the plot just act flamboyantly ridiculous to keep the plot moving. What they call the idiot plot, where if two characters sat down in a room and had a conversation with each other, the plot could be resolved in 15 minutes or less. I hate that kind of plot, but I'm willing to accept the fact that, every extra in a scene isn't necessarily going to be behaving rationally if they really want the scene to focus on the Joker versus Batman.
Yeah.
What I do not like, though, is when a film sets itself up to be, when a film presents itself in the first half an hour or so in an experimental way, and then it turns into a formulaic action film. When it seems like and a lot of superhero movies seem to be doing this now, and even other types of action movies and stuff, where the film really thinks that if it can make that first half an hour, the first 45 minutes, seem like it's not a superhero movie, they can get the critics to pay attention, and then they can flip it on them and still deliver the big action climax that the fans were expecting and that the people who just want to pay $9 for air conditioning were expecting. And that frustrates me. I don't know, because it bothers me when a film seems to have a lot of potential and it seems to be trying to do some crazy interesting things at the beginning, and then by the end it's a movie you've already seen 100 times. And the only exception to this rule is District 9, which I fucking loved, even though it did this. I absolutely adored District 9. I guess because it did so much that was so awesome in that first 45 minutes, and the action scenes in the last 45 minutes were... Well, really, it actually manages to remain an interesting experimental film up until the last 35 minutes or so. And that last extended action sequence is so well structured and so well shot that it's really engaging. So I said, whatever, I'll go along with it. But yeah, that was a really fantastic movie that did become a rather conventional action film at the end. The only superhero movie I can think of that really delivered for me start to finish was The Dark Knight. And I know that's cliched to say, and everyone says, oh, The Dark Knight is the best comic book movie ever. But really, it is. I mean, it just seemed like it was paced and structured so perfectly, and all the references to the real world, all the political subtext and stuff, was so carefully inserted in a way that wasn't too intrusive.
Yeah.
And, you know, unlike you, Alex, I never questioned the reality of that film. It never felt like it became a different film at some point in the movie. You know, it didn't feel like it started off really real, and then it got zany or something. It felt like the atmosphere and the tone were very carefully structured throughout.
Fine. Yeah, I don't know. I feel kind of the same way about The Dark Knight. I didn't think it really... Like, a lot of superhero movies kind of break down into that more ridiculous type thing after the first half. But Dark Knight kind of kept it together with the... I think it was the way they... Maybe the way they paced the villains. Because, like, they had the Joker throughout all of the first half, and they gradually built on, you know, Dent becoming Two-Face or whatever.
Right.
And then in the second half, they just pulled that, and it just kind of, it just kind of held together the two parts, I think. It held together the suspension of disbelief for me.
Right. Yeah, and I think it realized something about Two-Face that previous interpretations of the character haven't realized, which is that the most interesting thing about him is how he changes from Harvey Dent to Two-Face. And right. That once he becomes Two-Face, he's not really terribly interesting.
Yeah.
So I think that was a good idea to really only have him truly be Two-Face for the last 15, 20 minutes of the film.
Yeah.
And there's really only one confrontation between Two-Face and Batman in the film, and it's over like that.
Yeah.
But, and a lot of people were whining, like, oh, we want, how could they have, spoiler alert for the zero people who haven't seen this film, how could they kill off Two-Face in the, right after he's added to the film? You know, how could they kill him off in the last 5 minutes of the film when he was only Two-Face for the 10 minutes prior to that? And what I say is, you know, Christopher Nolan had a good sense of exactly how far he could stretch this character before he became boring. And having Two-Face appear just as a villain for a whole film, like the Tommy Lee Jones interpretation of Two-Face, or even a totally different interpretation of Two-Face, wouldn't have been very exciting, because the interesting thing about the Two-Face character is that conflict between the ostensibly, you know, good district attorney and the corrupt lawyer, you know.
Right.
And once one side wins that conflict, that character's dead. And I think Christopher Nolan realized that, you know. At that point in the film, Harvey Dent is dead. Harvey Dent knows he's dead. So he might as well die in the film.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that.
Alex, that was a rather exasperated, frustrated sigh.
Because I really think that it was just one of those... It was kind of a lame approach, because I really think they could have done more with that character themselves.
Really?
Because, even though there's that whole, you know... Because, like, when you get the comparison of, like, you know, Tommy Lee Jones' version of Two-Face versus, you know, whoever that character is for Harvey Dent.
Aaron Eckhart.
Whoever the actor is.
Aaron Eckhart.
All right, sweet. Thanks for telling me that. but what I was trying to say is the two different versions of, one was in the throes of starting up as a villain.
Mm-hmm.
The other one was a villain who actually spent some time on the circuit.
Right.
You know, Tommy Lee Jones actually had some experience being Two-Face. That's what I'm trying to say. His character was in the shit for a few years.
Right.
Meanwhile, you know, the new guy, because I instantly forgot his name as soon as you said it.
Aaron Eckhart.
But him. All right, hopefully third time's a charm, because I'm not going to remember that.
Okay.
But what I'm saying is his was the beginnings of it, and mm-hmm. it was squandered right from the get-go.
Really? Really, because I thought that they... I don't remember Tommy Lee Jones and Batman Forever very well, because I watched it when I was
young.
And
that's a shame on you. And that's shame on you.
And I never really wanted to watch it again. But my memory is that there was nothing really very compelling about Tommy Lee Jones's Two-Face. He was just kind of another wacky villain and... In a series,
to be honest
Two-Face
is a wacky villain. He's a one-trick pony.
Exactly. So why keep him on the screen for that long as that one-trick pony? You know, once the pony once the pony has performed its trick, you know, you go Game of Thrones on its ass and you kill that pony.
Well, why isn't, you know, Scarecrow's a one-trick pony as well? So why did they keep him around?
Well, they really didn't keep him around for the second film. He gets arrested a couple of minutes in. But he really wasn't... Maybe it was just the way the character was written for Batman Begins, or maybe it was just Cillian Murphy's incredible performance. But I could have watched Scarecrow for another 2 hours and be satisfied. I think something... about the performance hit just the right level of, not outlandishness, but, you know, eccentricity in the character, that to make him seem menacing and dangerous without making him seem like a Looney Tunes character. And
yeah, I mean, I think they had enough of the real life psychology stuff there,
right?
Which is scary to most people anyway. And they kind of, halfway through, they were able to flip that into his, well, now he's wearing a mask and spraying people with weird fucking chemicals and shit like that. And I thought that they transitioned it pretty well, I thought.
Yeah, and that's really what it comes down to, is how you stick that transition.
Right.
Because... every superhero movie has that moment where it has to transition from the build-up to the delivery. And that's always the most awkward, difficult moment in the film. Although I was not totally satisfied with Batman Begins, to be honest. The last 10 minutes or so, the battle on the train. I was trying to think of the word, the monorail or whatever it was, that ends with the big explosion. It seemed like, oh, it just became a superhero movie at that moment. After holding me through the rest of the film pretty much consistently, I mean, Katie Holmes' annoying performance aside, it pretty much had me there. And then in the last minute, it was like, oh, cop-out ending.
Well, yeah, because as we all know, that ending is the exact same ending as Lethal Weapon 2.
I didn't know that.
Where they use the same premise over and over again to prevent, you know, the guy from killing the dude. And then right at the very end, it's, you've been revoked, and he shoots him in the head.
Right.
Or he throws him off a cliff.
Right. It's like...
yeah.
Well, I forget what Batman says, but he says, you know, I don't have to save you.
I'm not,
you know,
yeah, I don't have to save
you. I'm not going to kill you, but I don't have to save you. And I think the way they handled it in The Dark Knight was so much more interesting than that. To have someone who Batman knows can never be, you know, the Joker will never be a functional member of society. It doesn't matter how many times they stick him in Arkham Asylum. He's never going to come out of there and get a job as a greeter at Walmart. You know? It's not going to happen. The minute he gets out, he's just going to kill some more people and do some more insane nonsense. And The Dark Knight establishes that. You know, this character is irredeemable. But to have Batman still feel obligated to save him, I think is a lot more Ing then saying, oh, you know, you dug your own grave, bye.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's not much I can say about the Heath Ledger Batman, I mean the Joker, because I still like Jack Nicholson's version of him.
I like both versions, but I have to give the fight to Heath Ledger, frankly.
Well, like for me, like I'll keep this short, but because we're dragging way too long on this one thing.
46 minutes in.
Was that the Heath Ledger version seemed like a character who was meant to die way earlier in the movie?
Really?
Because he did such crazy things that were in the gang world would get you killed really quickly.
Mm.
But because he dealt with people who were already insane, that was the only reason why he stayed alive.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, the old school Batman was the more, you know, I mean, sorry, the Nicholson version of Batman, I mean, of Joker, mm-hmm. it wasn't the original Joker, but it was the more modernized version, like a decade after the original Batman came to be.
Right.
Where he was a gangster that, you know, he finally flipped after being betrayed by his people, and he's decided just to make it where he gave up on life and everything was a joke to him now.
Right.
Meanwhile, the version that Heath did was just the, I'm crazy. And, hey guys, look at me, I'm still being crazy. Well, and to me, the Nicholson version was much more survivable. It made it sound like no one would want to be with that guy. Unless you were too dumb to realize that he was insane.
Right.
Like Nicholson, you would believe to actually be his friend. Remember, like, the whole scene about him killing Bob? And Bob was his right-hand man the entire time? No one expected that.
Too clearly.
I'm saying, though, no one expected that to happen because he killed people he hated. He let people that he actually liked stay with him. And then he finally killed his right hand man near the end of the Tim Burton Batman.
Right.
But Heath, his better version of the Joker, he killed whoever he wanted to kill at any given time. And unless you are mentally handicapped, you would have saw that he just killed his own his own henchman
right.
at will. And yet you wouldn't kill the Joker yourself.
Yeah, I mean the logic there is, I guess. Yeah. Questionable. I mean, I don't think he really ever worked with the same henchman twice. That was the impression I got
from the movie.
Yeah, and yet I kind of got the impression that some of his henchmen were just as crazy as he was, and I don't know if he was getting them from psych wards or what, but some of them were basically willing to perform outright suicidal acts for him.
Right.
Like the guy at the, wasn't there a guy who had a bomb in his stomach or something? And I'm trying to remember.
That was accidental, though.
Oh,
he did not want the bomb to be let into him.
Oh, he didn't. I thought.
Yeah, had the phone, but the thing of the agreement was that he had the phone in him, but they did not agree about him having a bomb in him.
Oh.
Oh, I see. Yeah, I remember the phone ringing and then him blowing up.
Yeah, that part was not his that version of the crazy Joker was him tricking people into he was basically Saw the real thing, which is the puppet.
Oh.
Yeah, that's basically was. He was basically Jigsaw, where he did horrible things and he played on people's emotions and, you know, their gullibilities.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean,
I hated that version because it was just Saw and I was like, "Oh fuck, we're watching Saw the movie, the live action movie of Saw." And I was turned off immediately after that.
Huh. See, I never really saw him as a... I can see where you're coming from. I just never really... I don't know. I guess I didn't watch the Saw films anyway because they looked really dumb. So that might be part of it. But...
Yeah.
I don't know. But I think one thing that the Heath Ledger Joker had going for him was the fact that he was so inscrutable. You know, you never got the... So often, a comic book villain is an origin story that either shows how depraved they are or shows how they were a good guy and then something happened to them. And then plus a goofy gimmick, and then you have your character. And at the end, they either become fully irredeemable or they realize who they used to be and they turn good and make a noble sacrifice or something stupid. I think the fact that Heath Ledger's Joker has no origin story, you know, you don't know where he came from. There's no rationalization, no easy justification for his actions. You know, there's no simple pop psychology way to explain why the Joker behaves how he behaves. Right. And also, as you said, Alex, why people follow him and, you know, why his schemes work out the way they do. Everything seems to be governed by chaos and insanity. I think that made him a lot more interesting to watch than the usual simple formula villain.
The only thing I don't agree with was the ideal, the mantra of him like doing with the chaos. Because mm-hmm. even though it sounded, it looked like it, all of his actions were pre-planned. No, all the stuff that he did was pre-planned. Like, he did the whole pencil trick, the whole, you know, I have dynamite in my chest, you know, right. That kind of thing. All those are pre-planned actions. He didn't do them on whims.
Well, that's what you can't really figure out, though, when you're watching the film. Because all of his actions are right on the borderline between being premeditated and being totally improvised. And you can never tell when he is just orchestrating a clearly crafted plan and when he's just improvising with what's at hand, you know, and when he's just introducing elements into the scenario and then figuring out how he's going to use them later.
Okay, I see what you're saying. I think that the whole mantra was there just for, you know, just to laugh at other people, I guess, because all of his shit was, I never saw a single thing of actual improvisation. It always felt like he had something at, you know, he prepared all of his actions.
Well, it seems like he prepared possibilities, you know, not plans.
Yeah.
Because same a lot diff of the to things, me, I mean, really.
A lot of things he did were so insane that it's like, how could you bank on that type of deal? But,
Well, I never saw that, so I guess that's what, yeah.
But Rudy, comics are your thing, and you've been largely left out of this, well, not comics, but superheroes are your thing, and you've largely been left out of this discussion.
Right, well, I don't know, I pretty much agreed with what was said by you as far as The Dark Knight. I thought that probably was one of the best, or the better, comic book movies that I've ever seen. Because, I don't know, just the way they made Batman, like, not goofy, I guess. I mean, to a certain degree, he was still kind of, you know, he still had his morality and his, you know, his overwhelming, you know, traits. Like the, you know, like his sensibility towards crime. And, you know, mm-hmm. I'm not going to kill anybody, I'm not going to do this. Which seems, you know, sort of out of place when you think about what he's dealing with.
Right, what Gotham is.
Yeah, I mean, but they had, I just really liked the way they kind of pulled it all together and had the unreal kind of mix with the reality of things. Like when he went to China and, you know, there was that part where he went to get the, what was his name?
I don't remember the character's name, but he was like the banker for the mob, right?
Yeah, he was like the mob, like, yeah, payroll dude. And, I don't know, just the fact that they actually showed him going to China, you know, they showed a place other than Gotham City.
Right.
And showed, well, yeah, it's not just like this closed environment, this singular type of world.
Right, and he went there also to commit, like, an extraordinary rendition, you know, to illegally, capture someone who had diplomatic immunity. So you had that sense of, oh, there's real international politics at work here, too.
Right, yeah, and he could cause an international incident.
Right.
Yeah. And that's something that, I think that's something with Batman, like, that they kind of made you look at, like, the consequences of, like, his vigilantism.
Right.
Or whatever, I guess, because the other movies, I don't think, really got at that.
Oh.
They didn't really get at, like, the real life. Like, this is a dude who just goes around and beats the shit out of mobsters. And at the same time, you know, he's the leader of, you know, the biggest corporation in Gotham City.
Right, right.
You know.
Yeah, I mean, he gets at the consequences of being a billionaire superhero in a global society.
Right.
You know, and all of the other movies and presentations are so insular that you can't believe that, you know how much, it would be like if Bill Gates had no real influence outside of, you know, Seattle.
Right, yeah.
But I think I had an epiphany here.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Batman, the new Batman, is equal to the Lethal Weapon series.
Really?
Like you said it yourself, the guy had diplomatic immunity when he went to China.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah.
We're done here. I know it's exactly what it is. The new Batman series is equal to Lethal Weapon.
I have not seen any of the Lethal Weapon movies.
Shame on you, Will. Shame. You've been double shamed already, but I do not want to triple shame you. In one show.
I've seen like most of the Lethal Weapon movies, but I've only like half watched them because it's usually a situation where, like, they're on USA or something, and I'm doing something else.
Right.
So I'm kind of half-watching them.
Okay, I've actually seen all four of them, like, legitimately. So that's...
There you go.
So, Alex, given your feelings about reality in superhero movies, how did you feel about Chronicle?
Of Narnia?
No, the newer, found footage superhero movie that came out in March, I think.
Well, I don't know much about that one because I've been burned so many times that I pretty much don't pay attention to a lot of those comic book movies now.
Oh, okay.
It was kind of like.
But hold on, I'll do a quick search of what Chronicle is, and then I'll give you my first reactions towards it.
Okay.
But go ahead and talk.
Okay, Rudy.
I was going to say it was kind of like Blair Witch.
Oh, this is bullshit. I remember this movie. I saw the trailer.
Okay. Well, why did you think it was bullshit?
Because they showed all the obvious, story plots in the trailer. And I just thought this was so hacky and so repetitive that I did not want to watch it. Because it was obviously a movie where three people have superpowers, one kid's troubled, and so he becomes the villain, and the other two try to stop him. And it's that simple.
Right. Well, I think the details in this movie really made it worth watching. Because, like, the kid was troubled and stuff like that, but they totally had, like, the Columbine type thing going on there where the kid, was... You know, he was like a loner, and then he got obsessed with, like, evolution and natural selection. As they all do, yeah. But I just like the fact that that they showed so much of his broken home life.
Yes.
In that, because, I mean, that a lot of times with supervillains, there's not really much of that, or... If there is, it's something superficial. It's like, well, he never knew his father because he was abandoned as a baby or something like that. But this, it was like his dad was, hitting him. And, it was obvious that he was having, like, a negative influence over the household because his mom was sick and was fucked up. And, like, and you could tell that the character was caught in between, some real serious shit. I mean, it was really like, serious, relatable shit.
Right. Right. And usually, they, as you said, they go the melodramatic route with the origin stories. Where and people don't stop to think, wow, maybe his life would have been worse if he had a father, you know, and his father was just a douchebag. You know, maybe he's an alcoholic. And his father wasn't a monster either. That's a good thing to point out, because a lot of times that they do have the bad parent. They're like a ridiculously evil parent, you know, like they do cartoonishly evil things. And this guy was just kind of a depressed alcoholic douchebag.
Yeah, he's just kind of a dick.
Right.
But yeah, I thought Chronicle was pretty neat. And they did kill off the black guy first, which was pretty cool.
Spoiler alert!
Spoilers! But, yeah, I don't really like the found footage thing so much myself, but I thought they did it. I thought that if you're gonna do it, and this was probably the way to do it. A superhero story. Because that's... I mean, you always have, like... You always have the press and the reporters and shit, like, following superheroes anyway.
Right.
And it seems like the whole thing, the whole, you know, kind of thing that surrounds it is getting these people's identity. And that almost like a paparazzi-type deal.
Mm.
But, like, just to show... kind of, to show that much of their lives, you know, and, like, the times when they're not superheroes, or when they're not, like, on their game, you know. Just to show that, I think, was pretty cool.
And, building off what you just said a minute ago, one thing I liked was the way they handled the found footage in the film. For the first hour or so before the superhero characters are public and flying around and making themselves visible, it's all pretty much shot with one camera that's owned by one character.
Right.
And there's, every once in a while, maybe it will flash to a little bit of found footage. There's a second character who has a camera who shows up sometimes, and her footage is kind of interwoven in a little bit, on and off. Right. And then when you get to the finale, when they're up there in the sky beating each other up, suddenly you're getting footage from people's camera phones, and you're getting security camera footage, and you're getting stoplight camera footage, and you're getting all these different forms of footage coming at you.
Yeah.
And it just makes so much sense. I mean, that's how information kind of works in our society now. It's almost like the moment when something goes viral, and it goes from having 10 hits to a million hits, you know?
Right.
They go from having just two people watching them, you know, to being largely insignificant human beings, to suddenly the whole world is watching them. And conveying that by switching to all these different forms of found footage, you know, and all these different sources of found footage, I thought was a really cool way to communicate that.
Yeah, and no other found footage movies really do that. Most of the time, it's just the stock single camera, dudes carrying it around, or there's some reason for it to be there. Like, but they didn't really use like new media as much as I think Chronicle did.
Right,
as you said, with the camera phones and the stoplight footage and that kind of stuff.
And even even Cloverfield, which was about a world, you know, well, not a global disaster, but a disaster that affected a hugely populated city, really is almost totally told through one video from one camera. And I know that that was sort of at, you know, not counting the Blair Witch Project, that was kind of at the forefront of this found footage thing. But I just think it's shocking that no one really thought to do it this way before, to integrate a whole bunch of different sources of footage and use that as a means of communicating something about the plot.
Mm. Yeah.
And use it more artfully than just making it a faux documentary.
Yeah.
And really, at no point does this film pretend to be a faux documentary, I think. I don't remember. It doesn't start with one of those goofy captions, like, this is where this footage came from or anything, does it?
No, I don't think it does.
I think it just really sort of seamlessly integrated all of that. It's another film that loses itself more in the last 15 minutes than the last half an hour, but it kind of felt like, oh, time to deliver the big superhero climax, and that kind of, it kind of ended on a cop-out. It felt like there were more interesting ways they could have resolved the plot. I'm not going to go too spoiler alert here and tell you how it ends or anything. But since Rudy actually already spoiled the black guy dying, I kind of felt like that was a cop-out, too, just because it seemed like there was more they could have done with that character. You know, and it seems like just quickly dispatching him so they can get it down to battle between these two guys kind of seemed like, you know, it seemed like a very obviously manufactured plot device in a film that didn't have too many obviously manufactured plot devices. So,
yeah.
We are at an hour here.
Oh, okay.
And so I guess this turned into Superhero Cast.
Yeah.
Any final thoughts on superheroes, Alex?
I'm starting to question your guys' tastes. I'm slightly upset. I feel like I should quit the show.
Heartbroken. Actually, Alex, so tell us about a superhero movie that you loved. What's your favorite superhero movie?
Quite possibly the one that doesn't follow the comic book itself. Honestly, all the stuff that I like are considered shitty movies to begin with. Like, I actually liked the 80s version of Captain America. You know that movie?
I haven't seen
it. I've seen parts
of it. I actually liked that version. It was crazy, but it was awesome. And I liked the Tim Burton Batman, and you know, people poo-pooed it. All the super nerds poo-pooed it because of there was inconsistencies like Batman killing the Joker.
Hmm.
And you know, because he's not allowed to kill people. That's his motto. His motto. You know, just stupid stuff. Basically, just take a hero, make it seem plausible that he'll actually do this, and don't create obvious plot holes. That, you know, that's my criteria. Don't make obvious plot holes and shit like that. And I don't care if it's fully on board with like how he would be, like, you know, the character or she, you know, just do that and we're good.
Mm-hmm.
There are very few movies that do that.
Yeah. I thought the Tim Burton Batman was pretty good. It's not Christopher Nolan's Batman, but it's probably the third best Batman movie. It's certainly a lot better than the Batman movies that came after it.
Yeah.
Rudy.
Well, heck, even his sequel was not that great.
Yeah, I've never seen Batman Returns, actually.
I remember seeing that in theaters, and it was pretty shit.
Oh. Rudy, final thoughts on superheroes.
My final thoughts are, basically superheroes are awesome. And I spend a great deal of my time either coming up with superhero concepts or writing superhero games. So, I'm just really kind of obsessed with superheroes. So I'll pretty much watch anything, any garbage that has superheroes.
You even watched Hitch. As I understand.
Not Hitch, what was it? Hancock.
Oh, Hancock. I get my Will Smith movies confused.
I even sat through that one just because it had a superhero premise. So.
Remember, Rudy, superpowers don't mean that they do physical feats of strength, you know? It could be that for Hitch, his superpower was he could get people to get on dates.
Yeah, he had the magical ability to get people laid. Actually, that would probably be more useful than some of the superpowers in the X-Men, you know, the lesser X-Men.
Yeah, some of the X-Men.
Oh, like a Null, remember?
Yeah.
We talked about that previously.
Yeah.
All right. So as with every Mom's Basement RPG, microphone.
Wait. No.
Eject.
No. It's not. I have more. I didn't give my last final thoughts on superheroes, and I did want to segue into something very quickly to end it with. But, so my final thoughts on superheroes, I don't know. I don't really have an opinion. You know, I don't read comics. I've never found superheroes to be terribly appealing in and of themselves. But if they're done right, they can be awesome. But often they're not done right. But, since I don't really have anything to say about this topic, and since Rudy mentioned that he is so fixated with superheroes that he often designs games about superheroes.
And yeah, I was actually going to talk about that, but I didn't want to.
Well, and I understand that, boy, it's almost May 1st, and we had said...
It's the first of the month.
Over at Misery Tourism Games, we had said that we are going to introduce a new game the first of every month. And here's my shameless pitch. Rudy, do you think it's possible? Do you think it's possible that your game for May 1st might be a superhero-themed game?
Oh, absolutely not.
Aw, goddamn.
No.
You sure about that?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Pretty sure it's not going to have anything to do with superheroes.
Nothing at all.
Nope. And it's especially not going to have anything to do with at-risk youth or, you know, inner-city stuff.
So,
at all.
This is not going to be a game about at-risk youth who are secretly superheroes and their mentors who are secretly supervillains.
Right, yeah, no, it's not going to be anything like that.
Not going to be anything like that.
Just to clarify, it's not going to be that one game you talked about on 31 that everyone can just go back and hear and know exactly what it is.
Right, it's not going to be that game.
Yeah.
Not at all. Nope. It's certainly not going to be a game that's basically Unbreakable meets Finding Forrester with Pictionary mechanics.
No.
Not gonna. Nope.
Not gonna happen.
Because... if it was that game, and we devoted the last 5 minutes of the show to talking about it, that would be shameless self-promotion. And if we here at Mom's Basement Podcast do not have shame, what virtues do we have left?
Yeah.
So, that reminds me, since we're talking about video, you know, it's comic book movies, and how most of them, like, most of the decent ones, like, from the beginning, are super childish.
Right.
This is where we find out at the ending of this Mom's Basement comic book movie.
That we're all super childish?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I think that people... our listeners have listened to any other Mom's Basement episode, or the first 1 hour of this episode, they would have probably figured that one out.
Yeah.
All right, I got nothing else to say. I'm going.
Okay. Bye, Alex.
Yeah, I don't have anything.
You're done? Fuck it. Fuck it. We're done. Done. Screw it. Microphone coming out. Bill O'Reilly storming off the fucking set. Okay.
Fuck it. We'll do it live.